welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, April 18th, 2024. I'm your reader, Mary Frances, and you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. On the front page of the Sioux City Journal today, we have three stories. First is Air Force Secretary says 185th upgrades are underway. Next is Lawmakers Revive Social Studies Bill. And the other story is Nebraska voter ID requirement, smooth sailing. And I'll start with that one. New Nebraska voter ID law causing few concerns thus far. As the first of the early voters entered the Wayne County Courthouse Monday morning, each dutifully presented a driver's license to the county clerk's staff to receive a ballot. If Monday was any indication, Wayne County Clerk Deborah Finn said, the first election conducted with Nebraska's new voter ID law could be a breeze. Overall, people seem to understand it, Finn said. Everyone has been ready so far. Early in-person voting for Nebraska's May 14 primary election began Monday, and county election offices began mailing early voting ballots to those who requested them on April 8. Whether voting in person or requesting an early ballot, voters for the first time had to comply with the state's new voter ID requirements, which Governor Jim Pillen signed into law on June 1. The law requires voters to show a photo ID, such as a driver's license, before voting in person. Those requesting an early ballot and those voting in counties that conduct elections only by mail must provide their driver's license number or the number from another acceptable form of ID or a photocopy of the ID with their ballot request form and ballot return envelope. Voters seem to be aware of the change and have been prepared. As of Friday, approximately 60 Dakota County voters who had requested early ballots all provided driver's license numbers without question. So far, everyone has complied. We haven't had any issues yet, said Dakota County Clerk Sherry Conley. I don't really foresee too many issues, she said. County clerks attributed that partially to the amount of publicity surrounding the new law and efforts to educate voters about the changes. Finn sent flyers provided by the state to every registered voter in her county. Dixon County Clerk Kathy Stillwell also conducted a re-election publicity campaign. We've done a lot of advertising in our local papers, so I think people understand, Stillwell said. The three clerks said they've received a few calls from voters who are unsure of the ID requirements, and there will likely be more as Election Day approaches. In Dixon County, where all elections are conducted via mail, ballots will be mailed to voters on April 24, and Stillwell said she expects to get some calls after that. The main thing voters who plan to vote in person early or at the polls on May 14 need to remember is to bring their driver's license or other form of approved ID. It's really not that complicated. Just show up with your ID, Conley said. Everybody seems to have a photo ID with them. Voters who forget their ID can vote provisionally, then must return to the clerk's office within a week to show their ID so that their ballot can be counted. In counties that conduct mail-only elections, such as Dixon County or Wayne County, in precincts outside of the city of Wayne, voters must write their ID number on their ballot, return envelope, or enclose a photocopy of their ID. That number will be checked against the number on file with the voter's registration, as well as the voter's signature. If there is a discrepancy, voters have a week to correct it. Finn said she's heard no complaints from voters about the changes. We've had a lot of positive feedback from voters. They believe it was time Nebraska did this, she said. Next story from the front page. Air Force Secretary, 185th upgrades are underway. Millions of dollars worth of infrastructure work is needed. This is from Dave Dreesen. Preliminary work has begun for major upgrades deemed essential for the 185th Air Refueling Wing to continue flying tankers at Sioux Gateway Airport, Air Force Secretary Frank Kendall said at a congressional hearing on Tuesday. Quote, "We have started the architectural engineering activities associated with three projects at the airfield," Kendall Kay told the Senate Armed Services Committee. "We're moving forward with those upgrades," he continued. Responding to questions from Senator Joni Ernst, Republican of Iowa, Kendall said the projects include $45 million to replace the main runway, $47 million to extend the runway, and $45 million to replace the deteriorating parking apron. Due to weight limitations for the Sioux City runway, the 185th's KC-135 Strat tankers cannot take off with a full load of fuel. The base is operating on a Federal Aviation Administration waiver that would expire in 2027 once the added lifespan of repairs done in 2022 to the main runway runs out. Since last year, Ernst has pushed the Air Force to fulfill promises the agency made to the Iowa Air National Guard base after it switched from flying F-16 fighter tanks to refueling aircraft in 2003. The commitment to upgrade the airport infrastructure to support the weight and size of the heavy tankers was mothballed in the midst of the war on terror as the military prioritized other projects. At Tuesday's hearing, Ernst pushed Kendall to commit to the 185th's mission continuing in Sioux City after the Air Force replaces the KC-135s with the newer KC-46 tankers. "I'm not aware of any changes that would occur," Kendall responded. Ernst also pressed Kendall for a timeline for completing the airport improvements. The secretary told the senator he would provide dates after the hearing, but stressed the projects are early in the process. "We've got such a great unit in the 185th, said Ernst, who served in the Iowa National Guard. "They have been so engaged around the globe. We want to make sure they're taken care of." The hearing came a day before the start of the Siouxland Chamber of Commerce's annual lobbying trip to the nation's capital. Among other issues, local leaders will push federal policymakers to fund the $185 million in upgrades required to keep the 185th in Sioux City. Next article from the front page, lawmakers revive social studies bill. Mandate focus on Western civilization and history of Iowa and the U.S. The Iowa Senate passed a bill requiring Iowa schools to adopt new social studies and civics education standards with a focus on Western civilization, U.S. and Iowa history, the structure, function, and role of the state and federal government, and, quote, "civic virtues displayed in the lives of exemplary Americans," unquote. Lawmakers Tuesday amended a bill that calls for the Iowa Department of Education director to conduct a review of Iowa school curriculum, education standards, and high school graduation rates and give recommendations to the governor and the legislature. Senate Republicans amended House File 2545 by inserting similar provisions included in a separate bill that passed the House in February, but stalled in the Senate and failed to pass a legislative funnel deadline needed to advance. The amended bill passed the Senate on a 33-14 party line vote, with Democrats opposed. The bill now goes back to the House for consideration. The original House bill would have required schools to teach a list of social studies concepts developed by a conservative think tank that focus on the, quote, "cultural heritage of Western civilization," unquote, and the United States, quote, "exceptional and praiseworthy history," unquote. The amendment passed by the Republican-controlled Iowa Senate includes language from House File 2544, which would have mandated Iowa K-12 schools to teach students about the structure of the U.S. government, the rights and responsibilities of U.S. citizens, and a range of concepts, people, and events in U.S. history, including the flag and national anthem, the country's founding documents, and, quote, "admirable Americans," including Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, Frederick Douglass, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and Abraham Lincoln. The language in the bill was modeled by the Civics Alliance, an offshoot of the conservative nonprofit education advocacy organization called National Association of Scholars. The group advocates for a curriculum designed to emphasize conservative values, Western civilization, and capitalism in civics education, and push out instruction on critical race theory, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and social justice. The Senate amendment includes similar provisions, requiring that, quote, exemplary figures and important events from Western civilization, U.S. and Iowa history are covered, as well as the federal and Republican form of government, in comparison to alternative forms of government, and the crimes against humanity that have occurred under communist regimes since 1917. It would also require history curriculum, including the teaching of, quote, secular and religious ideals and institutions of liberty, including political, religious, economic, social, and cultural liberty in Western civilization, the United States, and the state of Iowa, unquote. The bill directs the Iowa Board of Education to conduct a review and revision of the state's social studies standards to include these subjects for students in grades 1 through 12 in a relevant and age-appropriate manner. These standards would be adopted by December 31st, 2025. Republicans said the bill was necessary to teach Iowa students about the high points of American history and the achievements of the country's major historical figures, asserting students have a lack of understanding and appreciation of the nation's founding principles and role and functions of government at all levels. Democrats in the Senate argued that the bill was overly prescriptive of schools and ignores essential aspects of U.S. history like slavery, the Jim Crow South, and civil rights movement, Native American treatment, and other historical injustices. The bill does not require general instruction on the history of slavery in the U.S., but it does call for the instruction on the Emancipation Proclamation. Quote, this legislature has never put curriculum in the code, and it's not the job of the legislature to prescribe curriculum, said Senator Molly Donahue, who is a Democrat from Cedar Rapids, who has worked for 33 years as a special ed teacher. Quote, prescribing curriculum would limit teachers' time and resources, Donahue said. It's not age-appropriate or grade-appropriate, and it's sourced out from a state conservative group called Civics Alliance, without proper input from Iowa educators, parents, and school boards. By limiting curriculum to focus on Western civilization, Donahue worried schools would forego instruction on all other cultural and historic figures throughout world history. She asserted the bill amounts to indoctrination, quote, based on Christian nationalist ideals focused on whitewashing history, unquote. Senator Herman Kornbach, a Democrat from Ames, offered an amendment that would have changed references to Western civilization from Western civilization to world civilization, stressing the need for inclusive curriculum and a global education that understands and values diverse cultures and world economies beyond Western civilization. Senator Sandy Salmon, a Republican from Jamesville, said the language in the bill does not prohibit schools from teaching about non-Western civilization, but is intended to, quote, focus our youth on who we are. We're Americans, Salmon said. We were born in the Western civilization. That's our heritage. We have to understand that. And it's really important we do, because that heritage has produced the freest, strongest, most prosperous nation, civilization, in the world. And why wouldn't we want our youth to understand that? We want them to understand what we have to offer the world. Liberty, the protection of individual rights, the ideas of limited government, the ideas of free market, and so much more. Salmon said the bill does not prohibit or say students should not learn about other civilizations, but they better understand what our heritage is, where we come from, so that they will be able to understand where we need to go, unquote. Senator Jeff Taylor, Republican of Sioux Center, called Democrats' criticisms, quote, grossly unfair. He said the focus on Western civilization is important because it is the foundational context of both American history and current culture, from its form of governance to the use of the English language. While recognizing America is, quote, a nation of immigrants and made up of people from across the world, quote, because we are a melting pot that involves assimilation. Their cultures, their languages, the words that they use, it all gets added to this great experience of being an American, and that's wonderful, Taylor said. But also, they blend in, and they start to appreciate not only what they as newcomers bring to our land, but what the founding fathers brought to our land, unquote. Taylor said the broad language in the bill allows schools to teach a range of concepts, people, and events in U.S. history, and are not ignoring the contributions of people who are Asian American, African American, or Latin American, whatever, wherever. Quote, we're going to understand, and it's gonna include a discussion on slavery, he said. So, you know, I think in the end, when we want to be honest about where the United States came from, at least in terms of our political system and our founding documents, whether for the good or for the bad at times, but at the same time, we also want to be honest about what this bill does and does not do. And turning to page 2 of today's Sioux City Journal, here are your briefs. Fire destroys Sioux Center Auto Parts store. A fire early Tuesday caused an estimated $2.5 million in damage to a Sioux Center Auto Parts store. A passerby called 911 at about 2 a.m. after seeing flames at the Napa Auto Parts store, located at 1011 North Main Avenue. Sioux Center Fire Chief David Van Holland said the business was about half engulfed in flames when firefighters arrived. The auto parts store was destroyed, but firefighters prevented the fire from spreading to two connected buildings, which sustained some smoke damage. Crews from Ironton, Orange City, Hull, and Rock Valley also responded. There were no injuries. The fire's cause remains under investigation. Just prior to the call, Van Holland said Sioux Center firefighters had returned from extinguishing a gas line fire caused by a lightning strike. Our next brief, walking tour of Logan Park Cemetery for April 27. Notable people who've shaped local history will be featured in the Sioux City Public Museum's free Logan Park Cemetery walking tour, beginning 10 a.m. April 27 at the cemetery's 3910 Stone Park Boulevard entrance. Founded in 1892, Logan Park Cemetery is the burial site of Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist J. N. Dang Darling, pioneering Sioux City Journal reporter Louise Zerschling, and entrepreneur Henry Metz. The 90-minute tour will be led by the Museum Archives Manager, Tom Munson, and Archival Records Clerk, Haley Aguirre. The Sioux City Public Museum develops a series of cemetery tours as a way of exploring interesting people and stories of the past. Along with visiting the graves of several individuals and families, tour guides will show historic photographs, provide biographical information, and tell about their lives. To fully explore the cemetery, quite a bit of walking will be required, including some hills. For more information, you can go to their website, which is siouxcitymuseum.org, or you can give them a call, and the phone number is 712-279-6174. Our next brief, comedian Becky Robinson coming to the Orpheum. Stand-up comedian Becky Robinson will be bringing her She Gone tour to the Orpheum Theater on December 6. Originally from Portland, Oregon, and now based out of Los Angeles, Robinson is an LGBTQ+ comedian, actor, and voiceover artist who is best known as the Entitled Housewife, an outspoken golf character who has gone viral. Tickets will go on sale noon Thursday at the Orpheum's website, which is OrpheumLive.com, or at the Prime Bank box office. Our next brief, Who's Live Anyway returning to Orpheum? The current cast members of the Emmy-nominated television series Whose Line Is It Anyway will bring their live show Who's Live Anyway to the Orpheum Theater September 12. Featuring cast members Greg Proops, Jeff B. Davis, Ryan Stiles, and Joel Murray, Who's Live Anyway? Is 90 minutes of improvised comedy and music, all based on audience suggestions. Audience participation is key to the show, so the cast encourages audience to bring suggestions as they might be asked to join the actors on stage. Tickets go on sale Friday, 10 a.m., at the Orpheum's website, which is orpheumlive.com, or at the Prime Bank box office. Our next brief, area schools recognized for voter registration. Three Siouxland schools are recognized with the Carey Chapman Catt Award by Secretary of State Paul Pate for their work to register students to vote, eligible students. Central Lyon in Rock Rapids, Storm Lake St. Mary's, and West Sioux in Haywarden are all receiving the recognition after registering at least 90% of their eligible student body. The first two have won the award at least 3 years since it first began in 2019, while the latter is winning for the first time. Statewide, 43 schools won the trophy this year, breaking the record of 31 set in 2023. Two Siouxland schools, MOC Floyd Valley and Sibley O'Chaden, will get a banner for registering at least 70% of their eligible students. Westwood High School will receive a personalized certificate from Pate for registering 50% of its eligible student body. A total of 64 schools are receiving some kind of recognition this year. Chapman Catt, who died in 1947 and lived in Iowa for part of her life, gave speeches in Sioux City and elsewhere in the state in the years before the passage of the 19th Amendment in 1920. Iowa ratified the 19th Amendment in July of 1919, becoming the 10th state to do so. Our next brief, Wine and Chocolate Fest nets $337,000 to fight Alzheimer's. The 30th annual Alzheimer's Association Wine and Chocolate Festival raised more than $337,000 to help fund local Alzheimer's and dementia care while supporting worldwide research to find new treatments and a cure. More than 500 people attended the festival, which was held at the Lamars Convention Center in Lamars on April 11 and the South Sioux City Marriott Riverfront in South Sioux City on April 12. The two-day event has been in the Siouxland area since 1994. Winemakers from across the country attend and paired their award-winning wines with each course at dinner, each event including a unique silent and live auction. Nearly 7 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's disease, a leading cause of death in the United States. Additionally, more than 1 million family members and friends provide care to people living with Alzheimer's and other dementias. In Iowa alone, there are more than 62,000 people living with the disease, as well as nearly 100,000 caregivers. Next story, Dickinson County OKs Pipeline Ordinance. Supervisors of Dickinson County voted unanimously Tuesday to implement new restrictions on the placement of carbon dioxide pipelines to create larger buffers between them and people and animals. "We've tried to balance both sides," said Bill Leupold, that's L-E-U-P-O-L-D, who is chairperson of the county's 5-member Board of Supervisors. "I think this ordinance does it," he said. By approving the ordinance and waiving two other votes to make it effective immediately, the county faces the threat of litigation from Summit Carbon Solutions, which is a company that is on the cusp of potentially receiving approval for its project from Iowa regulators. Summit seeks to build a 5-state pipeline system to transport captured carbon dioxide from ethanol plants to North Dakota for underground storage. It has sued 5 other Iowa counties that have enacted similar ordinances. Dickinson's ordinance includes less restrictive separation distances, which county leaders have hoped will preclude them from litigation. I apologize. Notably, they reduce the distance from cities from 2 miles to 1,600 feet, or by about 85%. There is a similar setback requirement for homes. The ordinance also requires the pipelines to be at least a half a mile from schools, nursing homes, medical facilities, and public parks, and 1,000 feet from livestock operations. However, the reduced distances still have the potential to affect Summit's planned route through the county that is currently being weighed by the Iowa Utilities Board. A federal judge issued permanent injunctions in December to bar Shelby and Story counties from enforcing their pipeline ordinances. The ruling said the IUB has authority over pipeline routes, and the U.S. Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration governs their safety. Quote, "The courts see setbacks as safety standards, which fall under the exclusive authority of the federal agencies, not local ordinances," said Scott O'Connick, a Summit project manager, and he said that to the Dickinson supervisors before their vote. O'Connick said, "Despite the adjustments to the Dickinson ordinance, it is still very similar to those adopted by Shelby and Story counties. Appeals of the injunctions for those ordinances are pending." A Summit spokesperson did not immediately respond to a request to comment about the Dickinson ordinance. The county ordinances stem largely from residents' concerns about pipeline safety. A catastrophic pipeline breach can create a plume of carbon dioxide that hugs the ground and can travel long distances, potentially asphyxiating people and animals. Quote, "The Board of Supervisors is duty-bound to protect the health and safety of the citizens of Dickinson County," said Bonnie Ewalt of Milford to the supervisors at their meeting. She continues, "So I urge you to pass this ordinance in spite of Summit's stated intent to sue the county. This is simply evidence of the way Summit bullies its way through." Ewalt was among a handful of residents who spoke in favor of the ordinance. None spoke against it. Vicki Beck of Spirit Lake said she lives near enough to Summit's proposed route to be potentially affected by a pipeline break, but not sufficiently close to take part in its permit proceedings as an affected landowner. "As far as Summit is concerned, I have no say," Beck said, "but I live less than 1,600 feet from their pipeline, so I should have a say, and this ordinance is doing that." Summit has repeatedly said its carbon dioxide pipeline system will be the safest that has been constructed to date. In recent months, it has made new agreements to more than double the number of ethanol producers, for a total of 30, that might connect to the system in Iowa. "Safety of the landowners, communities, and our workers is ingrained in our corporate values and reflected in all we do," said O'Connick. He continued, "Protecting local communities and the landscape is our top priority." Summit's project is expected to cost more than $8 billion. The company and ethanol producers would benefit from generous federal tax credits that reward companies for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Ethanol plants would further be able to sell their fuels in low-carbon markets. Our next story, melee erupts at Sioux City's West Middle School. 9 juveniles arrested on charges of felony rioting. 9 juveniles have been arrested on charges of felony rioting after a melee erupted at West Middle School Tuesday afternoon. Sioux City police officers responded to the school on West 19th Street at 12:57 p.m. Community Policing Sergeant Tom Gill said the fight, which involved approximately 15 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, broke out in a hallway as the students were leaving the lunchroom. He said some of the students are the same juveniles who were involved in a fight at Casey's on Castleman Street in October. However, Gill said, that feud did not spark Tuesday's fight. "Apparently that feud is over and there's a new one going," he said. Gill said no weapons were used during the fight and only minor injuries were reported. "It was boys and girls. There were just minor injuries from being punched, kicked, and scratched," he said. Gill said the investigation is ongoing, and more juveniles are expected to be charged. He said some of the students fled the school before they could be arrested. He thinks there will be more arrests coming either later today or tomorrow, Gill said of the West Middle School resource officer. There's been 9 that were arrested, fingerprint, and transported to juvenile detention. The Sioux City Community School District said in a statement that school staff, quote, quickly responded, as did police, due to the number of students involved. Quote, conduct like that displayed today is not tolerated in our building. We want our building to be a safe and conducive learning space for all students. The students involved in today's incident face serious consequences, including disciplinary and legal action. We are continually reviewing our practices and procedures to do all we can to prevent incidents like the one today, the statement said. Next story, jail completion delayed again. Woodbury County LEC now slated to open in July. The completion of the Woodbury County Law Enforcement Center has been delayed to early July from the mid-May date given last month. Law Enforcement Center Authority Chair Ron White made the announcement Tuesday morning, saying the delay is due to continued mechanical system work and work on one of the elevators. Quote, based upon the current information now known to the authority, we believe the substantial completion date will now be in early July 2024, he said. The authority and the county continue to be damaged by the law enforcement center project being delayed. Previously, the jail project was pushed back to mid-May from an April 9 date due to mechanical work. The work on the mechanical systems continues to delay the project. Wyke said Monday morning it was determined that multiple changes needed to be made in the facility regarding the issue. Valves to fix a portion of the mechanical system issue were expected to arrive on April 4, and as of Monday, those parts had not yet arrived. The authority states the issues regarding the mechanical systems are due to, quote, errors on the part of the mechanical engineering services provided by Goldberg Group's engineering consultant Introba. That's Introba, unquote. Since October, there has been continued discussion on one of the elevators in the facility. The elevator in question goes up to the roof to provide access for maintenance. Originally, the control for the elevator was intended to be on a lower floor, but was instead put on the outside, said Shane Albright, project consultant from Baker Group. Because the controller cannot be exposed to temperatures below 40 degrees and above 103, design changes needed to be made to enclose the elevator, he said. The new jail was first slated to be completed in March of 2023, when it was bid in 2021. The completion date was then pushed back to August 2023 and later September 2023. In September, LEC leaders announced the completion date had been pushed back to a proposed April 9 date due to 38 missing fire dampers. Throughout the process, the authority has maintained they are working with their attorney to assess the costs and damages due to the delay of the project and state they will hold the responsible parties liable for the costs and damages. Next story, student found with airsoft gun at East Middle School. A student was found with an airsoft gun at East Middle on Tuesday afternoon. During lunch, a student told the school administration they saw another student with a weapon, according to a Sioux City Schools news release. Quote, administrators quickly located the student and discovered an airsoft gun on the student. The student faces disciplinary action for the incident, according to the release. Leslie Haying, district communications director, said they appreciate the student who made the report to the school administration. Quote, they did the right thing by speaking up immediately. Safety concerns can and should be reported directly to school administrators or through the district's website, unquote, according to the release. Haying said there is no further information available at this time. And here's a reminder that you are listening to IRIS. We're the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. You can check out podcasts, recordings of these and many other of our local programs right there on our website, which is iowaradioreading.org. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of our friends with print disabilities. That's why we're here. Now we'll turn to obituaries in today's paper. James L. Country Jim Henson, of Sioux City, formerly of Crofton. Services will be Friday, April 19, 10:30 a.m. at the St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Pierce, Nebraska. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, also at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. A wake will begin at 7 p.m. Military rites conducted by the Atomic Auto Post number 72 of Pierce and the United States Army Honor Guard. Jim entered into eternal rest on April 15th at the Unity Point St. Luke's Hospital in Sioux City. Stone Check Memorial Chapel in Pierce is in charge of the arrangements. Connie Mae Bach, age 70, of Glendale, formerly of Sioux City, passed away April 15. Memorial Mass, April 19, 10 a.m. at St. Boniface Catholic Church. The Moore and Becker Hunt Funeral Home is assisting the family. Betty Lou Lester, age 97, of Sergeant Bluff, passed away April 13th at the Floyd Senior Living in Sergeant Bluff, surrounded by her loving family. Visitation will be held at 1 p.m. Thursday, April 18th. So visitation 1 p.m. followed by a funeral service at 2 p.m. at the Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. A burial service will be held at the Memorial Park Cemetery immediately following. Evelyn F. Keller, age 95, of Newcastle, passed away Sunday, April 14. Graveside service Monday, April 22, 1 p.m. at the Silver Ridge Cemetery in rural Ponca, Nebraska. Arrangements under the direction of the Moore Funeral Home. Gerald Joseph Vasky, age 79, of Remsen, passed away Monday, April 15. Funeral service Friday, April 19, 10:30 a.m. at the Holy Name Catholic Church in Marcus, Iowa. Burial, St. Mary's Cemetery in Remsen. There will be a visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday at the Fish Funeral Home and Monument in Remsen. Warren Wayne Thies, or T-H-I-E-S, age 90, of Ute, died Sunday, April 14. Funeral service, Saturday, April 20, 10:30 a.m. at the St. Paul Lutheran Church in Ute. Visitation will take place, I believe, 6 p.m. the night prior. Doesn't really say, but that's just a guess. Diane T. Slater, age 81, of Carroll, formerly of Cherokee, passed away April 13th at the St. Anthony Nursing Home in Carroll. Funeral services, Wednesday, April 24, St. Paul's United Methodist Church in Cherokee at 10:30 a.m. Burial, Oak Hill Cemetery in Cherokee, and visitation with the family present will be held Tuesday, April 23rd from 5 to 7 at the Boothby Funeral Home in Cherokee. Now we'll turn to the opinion page for today. Another view from the Washington Post. Measles are back, more contagious. U.S. below 95% coverage, which provides herd immunity. 12 states are below 90%. This year is not yet one-third over, yet measles cases in the United States are on track to be the worst since a massive outbreak in 2019. At the same time, anti-vaccine activists are recklessly sowing doubts and encouraging vaccine hesitancy. Parents who leave their children unvaccinated are risking not only their health, but also the well-being of those around them. Measles is one of the most contagious human viruses, more so than the coronavirus, and is spread through direct or airborne contact when an infected person breathes, coughs, or sneezes. The virus can hang in the air for up to 2 hours after an infected person has left an area. It can cause serious complications, including pneumonia, encephalitis, and death, especially in unvaccinated people. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, one person infected with measles can infect 9 out of 10 unvaccinated individuals with whom they come in close contact. But measles can be prevented with the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine. Two doses are 97% effective. When 95% or more of a community is vaccinated, herd immunity protects the whole. Unfortunately, vaccination rates are falling. The global vaccine coverage rate of the first dose, that's 83%, and second dose at 74%, are well under the 95% level. Vaccination coverage among U.S. kindergartners has slipped from 95.2% during 2019-2020 school year to 93.1% in the 2022-23 school year, according to the CDC, leaving about 250,000 kindergartners at risk each year over the past 3 years. The virus is slipping through the gaps. According to the World Health Organization, in 2022, 37 countries experienced large or disruptive measles outbreaks, compared with 22 countries in 2021. In the United States, there have been 7 outbreaks so far this year, with 121 cases in 18 jurisdictions. Most are children. Many of the outbreaks are in the United States, or in the United States rather, appear to have been triggered by international travel or contact with a traveler. Disturbingly, 82% of those infected were unvaccinated or their status unknown. The CDC reports that in the decade before the measles vaccine became available in 1963, the disease killed 400 to 500 people, hospitalized 48,000, and gave 1,000 people encephalitis in the United States every year, and that was just among reported cases. The elimination of measles in the United States in 2000, driven by a safe and effective vaccine, was a major public health success. Though the elimination status still holds, the U.S. situation has deteriorated. The nation has been below 95% dose coverage for 3 consecutive years, and 12 states are below 90%. According to the World Health Organization, low-income countries with the highest risk of death from measles continue to have the lowest vaccination rates at 66%. The battle against measles requires a big, not a meh, effort. And that was another view from the Washington Post. Our next editorial comes from Jonah Goldberg, and it says he is editor-in-chief of thedispatch.com. U.S. support for Israel and Ukraine proving unreliable. He writes, after Iran's massive drone and missile attack on Israel Saturday, President Joe Biden reportedly told Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, quote, you gotta win, take the win, unquote. Most of the weapons, the first Iran had ever fired on Israel from its own territory, were successfully intercepted. Quote, from its own territory is a very loaded qualifier. It speaks to both the complexity and stupidity of the situation. Iran has been attacking Israel for decades, but not from its own soil. Instead, Iran has given Hamas and Hezbollah weapons, training, and other support to do its dirty work from Lebanon and the Palestinian territories. Indeed, it's clarifying to think of Hamas and Hezbollah as Iranian drones in human form. If your neighbor hired and equipped agents to throw Molotov cocktails into your home and worse, you probably wouldn't think it was a particularly meaningful distinction that they didn't do so from their own property. And if you prevented the Molotov cocktails from doing much damage with the help of other neighbors, you might not regard take the win as the soundest advice. Geopolitical deterrence is often a stupidity agreed on with sophistication. That's because perception of strength, resolve, and so on is an essential part of statecraft. Iran felt it had to retaliate following an Israeli strike on its consulate in Syria this month. Among those killed in that attack was General Ali Reza Zadi, who is an Iranian Revolutionary Guard leader who, according to Israel, played a key role in the, quote, planning and execution of Hamas's October 7th attack in Israel, or in Gaza, rather. That's part of the stupidity of deterrence doctrine. Every rung on the escalatory ladder may be treated by one side or the other as the beginning or the end of hostilities. That's partly why so many enemies of Israel started calling for a ceasefire before Israel had even responded to October 7. Even before the Iranian attack hit Saturday, Iran's UN delegation announced, quote, the matter can be deemed concluded, unquote. But from Israel's perspective, firing some 300 drones and ballistic missiles at its territory cannot go unanswered. Deterrence demands that Iran understand such aggression has consequences. Biden disagrees, because America and other allies helped Israel intercept the drones and missiles. He believes Israel will stand down and take the win. Quote, our aim is to de-escalate regional tensions, unquote, a senior Biden official told the Washington Post. It's a reasonable desire, but for Israel, not necessarily a reasonable request. What's clearly unreasonable are the demands for restraint from opponents of U.S. military aid for Israel. Insisting that Israel should not retaliate because its U.S.-funded defense system successfully blocked an attack is logically and morally incompatible with calling for an end to American aid. Without those defenses, thousands of Israelis might have died, and Israel would have no choice but to respond offensively, which could ignite the regional war everybody wants to avoid. But the real problem isn't the perception of Israel's willingness to defend itself. It's with Biden's and America's willingness to deter our adversaries. After October 7th, Biden had a one-word message for Iran and other bad actors seeking to take advantage of the situation. Don't. Iran argued that advice, or ignored that advice on Saturday, but it also ignored it months earlier when Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Iranian-backed Houthis attacked Israel and Western shipping. Moreover, regional and geopolitical instability did not start on October 7th. Biden's early abandonment of the U.S.-backed government in Afghanistan arguably started this cascade of uncertainty. Russian President Vladimir Putin may have seen it as a sign of Western weakness, contributing to his decision to invade Ukraine. Biden's subsequent vow to provide Ukraine with whatever it takes as long as it takes to defend itself was realized too haltingly. Now, because of Republican opposition in Congress, it could be a dead letter. Domestic politics have severely undermined the perception that America is a reliable ally. The war in Gaza is unpopular with the base of the president's party, prompting his near-constant rhetorical undermining of Israel. And even as Ukraine's front with Russia is buckling, the administration has told Kiev that it should not attack Russian oil installations for fear of inflated oil prices in an election year. It's almost as if Biden's don't doctrine gives allies just enough support to lose slowly. And that was from Jonah Goldberg, who is editor-in-chief of thedispatch.com. Our next opinion comes from Danielle Coffey, who is president and CEO of the News Media Alliance, which is a nonprofit advocate for 2,200 publishers across the United States. And she writes, don't let Google censor news and damage democracy. Google is, for better or for worse, the front page of the internet. The nearly $2 trillion company controls more than 90% of the online search market and is so ubiquitous that the company's name is often used as a verb. But never has it so openly and transparently used its size and market dominance to try to directly influence a public policy debate than now. Last year, California Assemblymember Buffy Wicks, who is a Democrat from Oakland, stood up to the largest internet company in the world and fought for California journalism by introducing the California Journalism Preservation Act, AB 886. Members of the assembly supported her, passing the California Journalism Preservation Act, or CJPA, on an overwhelming bipartisan vote of 55-6. Last week, as the legislation has awaited action in the Senate, Google punched back. The internet search monopoly throttled traffic to California news sites in an attempt to threaten, intimidate, and cajole California publications and lawmakers into dropping their support for the CJPA. This undemocratic attack on journalism was an attempt to silence the voices of local news providers. We will not be silenced. The fight over the California Journalism Preservation Act is not just a fight for local news survival in California, but a fight for democracy. The simple fact is that Google's growth and dominance has come at the expense of local news and other businesses, which must play by their rules or risk obsolescence. Newsrooms across this state and this country are shrinking, and local newspapers are closing. In fact, 2,500 newspapers have closed their doors since 2004. Around the country, more than two newspapers close every week. The shift in the way news is consumed in the last 20 years has led to a media landscape where many get their news on social media. These same platforms would sooner promote mis- and disinformation and put their users and democracy at risk than pay publishers of quality journalism fairly for the use of their content. The CJPA is a common-sense piece of legislation that requires Google to pay publishers and broadcasters for the use of the news outlet's content. Publishers would be required to spend 70% of any funds collected as a result of these payments on journalism jobs. The bill has only improved since overwhelmingly passing in the California Assembly last year. Wicks has agreed to language that would base payouts on the number of journalists a paper employs and set aside a portion of funds for small local papers. Wicks understands that when local journalism thrives, democracy thrives. Google's strong-arm maneuver to throttle traffic to news sites won't work. We will not allow local newspapers to be censored, silenced, and threatened, even by one of the largest companies on the planet. Google is not above the law. Local news providers will not bow down to threats, and we will continue to advocate for sensible legislation that can revitalize our independent news media. Our resolve to protect journalism and preserve democracy has never been stronger. And that was from Danielle Coffey, who is president and CEO of the News Media Alliance. And that's a nonprofit that advocates for 2,200 publishers across the United States. Their website is newsmediaalliance.org. And then the political cartoon today, it's kind of a map, and there are only two countries on it. One is Iran, and it is in green, and then Israel is in blue. Iran, the shape of the country is correct, but they've drawn in an Iranian leader with a handful of missiles, and he is tossing the missiles into the air. They fly over and hit the Israel part of the map, but just above the Israel part of the map, you can see little star shapes, which shows that the missiles are being diverted out to sea. And that is all the time we have today for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal. For Thursday, April 18th, 2024, you're listening to IRIS, we're the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. All material heard right here on IRIS is intended solely for the use of our friends with print disabilities. You can listen to this and many other of our programs on demand on our website, which is iowaradioreading.org. Loved reading for you today. Have a great day.